You guys ever have those moments where you just can't help but remember all that God has done and what a strange thing it is to be where you are? That has nothing to do with the sermon. I just was thinking of that as I'm standing there worshiping with you all, because this was not my plan. This was never my plan. And to be here is crazy. It's not what I thought. But here I am. So, before we get into this, and remember the video, remember what we're talking about, but I want to just share a couple things about the Philippines. You know, a lot of you are faithfully praying and supporting us financially, so thank you for that. We couldn't be there if it wasn't for your support. Some of the new things, maybe, that are going on, or old things that I'll remind you of. First of all, biggest new thing is we've recently rented a space on the other side of the island in Toledo. So that's a place where we can have meetings, where we can invite students to come, and we've only had it for about a month, and so far we have never done anything that has brought more people to our Bible studies than renting a room. So who knows, but we're hopeful. We hope that God will allow us to use that space well for His purposes, and it's been a good thing so far. Beyond that, you know, those of you who follow what we're doing, many of the times that teams come, we are doing MTI classes. Chelsea and I recently went and revisited all of those pastors at three different locations, three different islands, to just kind of reconnect with them for the end of the year, kind of a time of fellowship, and just to make sure that they didn't forget who we were before the next team joins us. And that was a great time. We were able to see everyone, pray with them, and spend some time looking at the Bible. We just did that right before we came, so it was a busy time. Beyond that, many of you know that we are attempting to plant a church in Cebu City, pretty much the size of the worship team that was up here today. That's our normal attendance. So we're just starting out, but we have seen some new people lately, both at church and at street level, a lot of new faces. So if you think to pray for us, pray that those people who are showing up and attending would find themselves committed to what God actually has for them. But church has been going good. They had service just a couple hours ago. I don't know how it went. I didn't hear. But I looked on the cameras, and I can tell that there were people that attended. That's all I can say. What happened, I don't know. And the building is still there. Our office space is still there. Beyond that, we do street level in Cebu and Toledo, and every week we're having Bible studies. I broke it, guys. Come to your church, and I start breaking stuff. I gotta turn this here, maybe? This is like the Philippines. Stuff breaks all the time. I'm used to it. As long as there's no cockroaches falling on me, we'll be good. So we do our university Bible study, and we've got some people that are applying to become members. We have members who are committed to the ministry, and some new people want to be a part of it. So God seems to be doing some cool stuff lately, and we're excited about that. We want to continue on and see what He will accomplish. So, with that, we will turn our attention to Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes chapter 12. Chapter 12. Now, a few years ago, there was a number of us from the Duluth Church, and a couple people from here even. We went on a missions trip to a very small town called Campton, Kentucky. Campton, Kentucky. It was about 6 years ago, and we had a long day of work. And we were tearing down some walls, and it was hot. But we got done a little bit early, so we headed into the nearest town, kind of like where you're doing your community Bible studies. I won't call it a city. It's probably not a town, but Jackson, Kentucky was the town. And it was a just wonderful night. It was like a scene from a movie. Perfect weather, beautiful little tourist village. There's like many of the small towns there in Kentucky, there's mountains on either side. You're in this valley. The Kentucky River is running through there. We went out for dinner, great food, and there was actually strangers at the restaurant who never knew us that were handing us money. So that was, you know, a good night. But then we left there, and we had a little bit of time, and it was sunset in this beautiful village, and we're driving around, and we see a road that was called Picnic Hill Road. Okay, we thought we should go up there because there's probably this nice overlook at the top of this hill where you could have a picnic, like a park maybe. That seems logical for a road called Picnic Hill Road. And some of you may remember, at the top of this road, as we went, it gets narrower and narrower. I'm fairly certain it went from concrete to gravel to mud as it went. And we get up there, and guess what? There was nowhere for a picnic. There was nothing. There was nothing. There's nothing there. So the sign says Picnic Hill. And we get up there, and pretty disappointing. It was kind of a trip of vanity. A dead-end street. The only thing that it was good for is now a sermon illustration 7 years later and an exercise of teamwork, because there we are in a 15-passenger church van, and we have to turn that around on a road that's about as wide as the van. So Pastor Justin was driving, and we got to see who had a little bit of bravery, and they would say, no, keep backing up, there's room before we'll fall off the side of the cliff to our death. And then the people who were a little less brave, who were stopping him, 10 feet early. But it was an adventure, but we didn't find what we were looking for. Not at all. Not at all. Shortly after I moved to the Philippines, some of you have been to where we live. I was walking, and we live on a street that most people can't pronounce, so we call it 4th Street. But the road before that is actually called 3rd Street. And I wasn't paying attention, and I turned one block too early. So I'd been walking, I had been sweating because the Philippines is hot. It feels like 96 degrees. And I was hoping for the comfort of my home. I was hoping to find my wife. I was hoping for some nice cold air conditioning. But I had turned on the wrong street. I got to a dead end. And if any of you have been there and you foolishly have done the same thing, you know what? It's at the end of 3rd Street? A brick wall. A brick wall. So I get there, and there's nothing there. There's nothing there. Okay, and you might get the idea. There's these ways we go in life, thinking we're going to find something, thinking that what we need, what we're desperately searching for, is going to be there. And you go down these streets, and they turn out to just be disappointment. You know, in my case, it turned out to a fair amount of embarrassment. And I was just hoping that Chelsea wasn't looking at the app to see that I drove the wrong way and then had to turn around. But here it is, a sign of a symbol of how many of us live our lives, going down these paths looking for fulfillment, looking for what we think will satisfy, and then we look up and it's simply not there. It's just not there, okay? It's like climbing a ladder and you get to the top and there's nothing there. Climbing a ladder to nowhere. Climbing a ladder to nowhere. And there's signs that seem to point to fulfillment. They're like, just ahead, there's something great. And ultimately, nothing there. And that's the illustration over and over in the book of Ecclesiastes. If you've never read the book, it should take you about 30 minutes. You should read the whole thing. But today, we're looking at just the final chapter, the conclusion of the whole matter. So with that, let me pray and we'll dig into it. God, I pray now that you would be with us, that this wouldn't just be a Bible study because it's Sunday and, well, we're supposed to go to church, but that now you would give us minds of understanding, that you would give us humble hearts willing to receive your word, that you would give us the faith to actually believe it, and then the courage to boldly live it out in the individual lives that you have for each and every one of us. Amen. Now in the book, you need to have a little bit of an understanding of the whole book for us to go through this. It starts in chapter 1 with words like this. In verse 8 it says, everything is wearisome. Everything is wearisome beyond description. So he's like, I can't even explain how wearisome this is. And he goes on and says, no matter how much we see, we're never satisfied. And no matter how much we hear, we will never be content. Chapter 1, verse 2, he says, everything is meaningless. And in case we didn't get it, then he just repeats it. He says the teacher, everything is meaningless. You probably know it was King Solomon who wrote this book. And as he does it, he takes the readers, you and I, the people who will pay attention to his words, down these dead-end streets. And he says, I tried this, I went this way, and it didn't satisfy. And as you read it, the interesting thing is, he kind of just takes you down the roads and then gets to the end of the matter and he's like, and it didn't work. It didn't work. I looked up and there's a brick wall. One of the ways that he tried to live, and see if this might be familiar to you or to people you know, was first he chased after wisdom. He says, I set my mind on wisdom. I applied my heart to wisdom. So when he does that, it's as if he's saying, I'm going to pursue knowledge and education. Okay, I'm going to be really smart, as intelligent as I possibly can be. And I'm not saying that's wrong. So if you're a student, I'm not saying education and knowledge is wrong. But you will find, no matter how many classes you go to, you're not going to find the answers that you're desperately looking for. No matter how smart you get, it won't satisfy the deep longings of your heart. And Solomon, he actually did it. Like, he actually was smart. Some of us, we go to class, and no matter how many classes we go to, we don't get any smarter. Solomon did. He said this in chapter 1, verse 16, look, I'm wiser than any other. He says, I'm smarter than everyone else. I have greater wisdom, greater knowledge than any. But then just, it's only two verses after that, he says, but you know what? In much wisdom is much grief. In much wisdom is much grief. And he who increases knowledge leads to sorrow. To sorrow. So he went to college, he studied with the best professors, best instructors, he passed the exams, got the grades back, and did good. And yet he says, it didn't cut it, it wasn't enough. Wasn't enough. So that's the first street he tried. Then he said, well, I'll try another street. And the next street he tried was basically the exact opposite. Instead of chasing wisdom, he went after what the Bible calls folly. Folly. Basically, he lived a life in a really lighthearted, take nothing serious, well, everything's funny, no big deal kind of attitude. And you're not going to be surprised by this, but if you live like, well, nothing really matters, he found, well, nothing really mattered. Didn't really work. So wisdom didn't work, folly didn't work. He went on to his work. Okay, he chased after material things through his work, and he was really good at it. He was building parks, he was building houses, great accomplishments, and it didn't work for him. It wasn't enough. He said this in Ecclesiastes 2:22, for what has man for all of his labor and for the striving of his heart which he has toiled under the sun? His days are sorrowful and his work is burdensome. He says, I worked all the time. I put in all this effort, and what do I get for it? It's wearisome, burdensome. Wasn't enough. In chapter 5, we see him say that no matter how much you get, it will never, ever, ever be enough. He says, no matter how much you get, you always want more. It's never enough. He goes from work and starts trying other things. Wine, women, and song, it says in the book of Ecclesiastes. It's like literally sex, drugs, and rock and roll. That was him. But then, as I don't remember, someone wrote, is for him it was rocking harp, because that was what was happening back then. If you know his story, he had 700 wives. It's like, well, this one's not enough. I'll try another one. That's like a different wife, you know, every day for 2 years, not counting his concubines. Do you know that his net worth, there's people who have tried to calculate what his net worth would be today, and of course that's hard to do. There's a lot of assumptions to make, but you look at what he owned, what he was in control of. His net worth, if converted to American dollars today, is over $2 trillion. There's no trillionaires today that we know of. No trillionaires. The most recorded is, I wrote it down, I think it's like $360 billion. Okay, so he had roughly six times more money than Elon Musk does today. He had a lot. He had a lot. So he got smart. He had all the relationships. He got the money. He got the money. And he says it didn't work. It's all meaningless. Everything I tried wasn't enough. So at that point, which is kind of where you get to at the end of chapter 11. At that point, you're like, this is a really depressing story. This is a depressing road trip, if you want to picture it that way. Well, we tried here. It didn't work. I turned around. I never actually got anywhere. So why does he do this? Well, of course, we understand he does this. He does this to point us to the one way that actually does work, the one street that doesn't end in a dead end, the one road that isn't full of empty promises, but that actually leads to real fulfillment, real fulfillment. And no one here, if you came to church today, you're not surprised by this. If you thought you were going to learn something new today, you're probably going to be disappointed, right? We know the right road. Everyone who showed up to church today knows the right road. You're not going to be surprised to hear me say that every endeavor, everything that you try to do apart from God is going to prove to be an exercise of futility. It'll be empty, it'll be vain, it won't satisfy. And you all know it, and yet many of us do it. Many of us tomorrow will do it. And you know why? Because these roads that we can say are empty, we say they lead to dead ends, they don't look like it. You see these roads, the way he went, there's tons of people on them. Okay, when you see like a 5-lane highway with hundreds of cars, you don't think it's going to a dead end. When you see roads with billboards promising great destinations ahead, you don't think it's going to lead to a dead end. And yet Solomon here in chapter 12 is giving us a plea to ignore all the people on those roads, to ignore the billboards pointing to satisfaction, and instead choose the road that looks narrow, looks painful, looks like you'd rather not take it, but is the only one that actually gets you what you need. The only one that actually gets you what you need. The only one that actually goes anywhere. So he says in verse 1 of chapter 12, "Remember now your Creator in the days of your youth, before the difficult days come and the years draw near, when you say, 'I have no pleasure in them.'" Remember now your Creator. Now, when we hear the word remember, we think back to like taking tests. Maybe you had to learn all of the states and their capitals, or you had to memorize the periodic table. And you're like, I know how many protons and I don't even remember what those are. I went to school for chemistry, and I'm like, I don't know the periodic table anymore. You know why? Because you remember those things, and they don't matter. Who cares? But the remember that's being talked about here goes beyond being able to recite information. Okay, it's beyond that just mental surface level remembrance. This is a multifaceted call. Okay, multifaceted, there's a lot to it. It encompasses thought. Okay, thought, action, and commitment. Thought, action, and commitment. The original word is zakar. Doesn't really matter, but you need to know that this goes beyond a mere recollection, but it implies an active, intentional acknowledgement. And listen to this, that leads to practical outcomes. When you remember state capitals, doesn't lead to practical outcomes. You remember God, it changes your life. Changes your life. Okay, if our remembrance, if our way of remembering God, thinking about God, considering God, doesn't change everything, we don't accurately remember him. And I think it's noteworthy here, he doesn't just say remember God, he says remember your Creator. Remember the one who made you. The one who created you. And why would he do that? Well, when he says remember your Creator, it does two things. It establishes God's authority. It establishes his authority. And it establishes that we are indebted to him. Okay, it's the authority because if God made you, if he created you, he's kind of in charge. He knows what he's doing. If you ever create anything, you get to tell me how to use it. Okay, so it establishes his authority, but then it also establishes that we are in debt. We wouldn't have life if it wasn't for him. We would not exist. You would not be here if it wasn't for God. So remember him. He's in charge. You owe it all to him. So despite what so many smart people want to say, we were actually created. Despite what the real smart people say, that you're just kind of a product of chance plus time plus some matter mixed together equals you. No, God actually created you. These really smart people are too stupid to open their eyes to see reason. God designed you. He created you for a purpose. So remember him. Remember him. And notice it tells us when to remember him. When are we supposed to remember him? In the days of our youth. Remember him while you're young. Remember him now when you still have a chance. Well, why is that? Why is that? Well, he goes on, verse 2, do it while the sun and the light, the moon and the stars are not darkened, and the clouds do not return after the rain, in the days when the keepers of the house tremble, and the strong men bow down, and the grinders cease because they are few, and those that look through the windows grow dim, when the doors are shut in the streets, and the sound of grinding is low, when one rises up at the sound of a bird, and all the daughters of music are brought low. Also, they are afraid of height, and of terror in the way. When the almond tree blossoms, the grasshopper is a burden, and then desire fails. For man goes to his eternal home, and the mourners go about the streets. So at first, when you read those verses, you're like, I think I lost you there. Like, what's this mean? What's this all about? Well, all this is he is poetically, with great imagery, describing the aging process. The aging process. You're going to get older. You're going to get older, and we could look at each individual metaphor and picture he uses here, and I'll explain some of them, but the idea is just, you're going to get older, so remember God now. Okay, when it says this, if you're understanding it, it's kind of a somber picture, it's kind of sad, but it's a realistic thing. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. The keepers of the house... Okay, the keepers of the house, that's when hands start to tremble. Okay, the keepers of the house refer to trembling hands. Strong men to your weakening legs. You can't stand for as long anymore. You don't go for runs anymore. The grinders, you might be able to figure this one out. Okay, test for you. What part of your body might be the grinders? It's your teeth. And it says that there's not a lot of grinding because the grinders are few. Your teeth don't work that well anymore. Maybe over the holidays, some of you had a chance to go and visit Grandma and Grandpa. And if this is true of anyone here, I'm not trying to insult you, but you ever go and visit someone who's older and you notice you don't really have to ask for like a knife? Because they already made sure that all of the food that they served to you was good and tender, because their grinders don't really work so well anymore. Okay, the windows, what's the windows to you, is the eyesight. Your eyes aren't working so good. You know, I've been gone for a while, and I come back, and I wonder if some of you have glasses who didn't have glasses before. You've got cataracts now. You can't see. You can't read. In Duluth, this worked really well because now on Sundays, Pastor Justin's always wearing glasses, and it's like, you didn't used to have those when I was here. But your eyes don't work so good. Okay, the doors, those are your ears. Okay, you don't hear anymore. You're kind of deaf. People have to raise their voice to get your attention. And because of that, you're closed off to the noise of the street is the imagery. Okay, so he's painting a somewhat vivid decline that we're all going to face. It says that they're afraid of height. Okay, sometimes there comes a time, I don't know what age it is, but you shouldn't go on a ladder anymore. You go find someone younger to do it. Because, you know, if I fall off of here, I'm probably not going to get back up. You don't sit on the floor anymore because to get back up to that height is going to be hard. You know, you live here in Dunn County where everyone has pickup trucks. You know, when you're in the back of the truck, there comes a day where instead of jumping down, you're like, maybe I should just sit on the tailgate and slowly lower myself so that my knees don't get hurt. See, you're there, aren't you? But you get the idea. Your body is going to fail. It's going to fail. The almond tree blossoms, that's you're losing your hair. Okay, you're losing your hair. Someone today told me that one of you is losing your hair. So this is true of at least one of you here in this church. And then it has this grasshopper picture. It says the grasshopper is a burden. The grasshopper is a burden. And when you read that, if you just read it once, and depending on your translation, you're like, I don't know what this means. But look into it. Look into it. Some translations say the grasshopper drags itself along. The grasshopper drags itself along. Did you know that grasshoppers, they're not supposed to drag themselves along? They're supposed to jump, like, I think it's like 80 times the length of their body or something. They jump. They don't drag themselves along. A grasshopper that's dragging itself along is going to die. Someone probably stepped on it. And then lastly, it says desires fail. So lastly, desires, and you can figure out what you want to apply this to, but desires that at one time were natural, normal, and healthy fail. Fail. So this is a bit of a grim picture, and right now you might be kind of thinking, boy, some of this is true of me. Or you might be thinking of people you know, yeah, they're getting older. So it's a grim picture, but this isn't meant to make us afraid of getting older. You're going to get older. Okay, either Jesus is going to come back, you're going to die, or you're going to get older. That's the three options. It's not meant to make you afraid of getting older, but it's meant to wake you up to the shortness, the fragile nature, the brevity of life. Okay, so it's not meant to make us unduly afraid, but it's meant to instill in us, impress upon us the importance and urgency of our life, of our service to God. So don't fall for the lie that serious stuff can wait. That serious stuff can wait. That's what he's saying. Don't fall for that lie. The serious stuff, the stuff that matters, the stuff that's important, it cannot wait. I would say I started following God pretty young. I was relatively young. But you know what? I knew what it meant to follow God before. I knew it. I knew what the Bible said. I knew what God expected. But I didn't want to do it. I threw those years away. So I thought, well, I'll just wait. Verse 5, he says, because man is going to his eternal home, and then mourners go to the streets. You're going to your eternal home, and there's mourners. We're talking funeral. People are going to die. It's a sobering reminder, death is inevitable. Hebrews 9:27, it's appointed for you to die once, and then judgment. You're going to die. As far back as the Puritans, way back in the 1600s, there was this common warning. They don't know who kind of started it, but there was this warning being given. And I think it's an important one for us today. And it's a warning that Satan wants us to believe that youth is for pleasure. Okay, when you're young, go do fun stuff. Just chase whatever you want. And that manhood or adulthood, when you're an adult, that's for business. That's when you get serious about kind of building a life for yourself. And that at old age, concern yourself with religion. At old age, concern yourself with religion. This was a reminder that Puritan authors said over and over and over 400 years ago. And it's a reminder people desperately need right now. Don't waste your youth. Don't waste your adulthood. Be serious about God right now. We're talking about this in class today. One of the undeniable things of culture is that there seems to be this unwillingness on the part of most people to face the reality of death. And because of that, they waste years of their lives neglecting what actually matters. Neglecting this reminder to remember, commit to God while we're young. Verse 6 says, remember your creator before the silver cord is loosed, or the golden bowl is broken, or the pitcher shattered at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the well. Then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. So here there's this imagery that continues, and you can get lost in it and think, well, what does this mean? But the idea is there's valuable things, gold and silver, that are broken. There's useful things, the wheel and the jar, the cup, that are shattered. They're useless. Okay, there's valuable and useful, and remember God before they're broken. Our life is valuable, it's useful, there's a purpose. Remember God now. Okay, there's thought that this snapping of the silver cord could be on a lamp, and the cord cuts, and then the lamp snuffed out and light is gone. But it really doesn't matter. The idea is your life is valuable, your life is fragile, and it's going to be gone. It's going to be gone. This reminds us what James 4:14 says. Okay, you are a mist. Your life, it's like a mist. It appears for a little time, and then it vanishes. Life's short. Do you remember when people that were older than you would tell you that, and you kind of laugh at them? And then you get a little bit older, and you're like, "Mom, life is short. Time really does speed up as you get older." It's true. Right now I'm looking at some teenage-ish people that are like, "He doesn't know what he's talking about." No, I do. I do. Life's going to go fast. Don't throw it away. Okay, here's a fact. Remember when I said you weren't going to learn anything new? Here's a fact you already know. Right now, you are younger than you're going to be tomorrow. And I say that because you might think, well, it's too late for me. Okay, I didn't remember God in my youth. It's too late. I guess this doesn't have anything to do with me. Well, you're younger now than you'll be tomorrow. Right this instant is the youngest you'll ever be. The youngest that you will ever be. Okay, so what's the takeaway from that? Hurry up. Get to it. Life's passing by. It doesn't stop for anyone. Time's running. Stops for no one. In Psalm chapter 90, verse 12, I've always appreciated this verse. It says to teach us to number our days. Teach us to number our days. Why? Well, then you won't waste them. I got 1, 2, 3, 4. I got these days. I want to use them how I should use them. John chapter 9, verse 4, familiar verse. I must work the works of him who sent me while it is day, because the night is coming when no one can work. Whatever you're going to do, do it now, because there's going to come a time where the opportunity is not there. Okay? There's going to come a time where whatever opportunity that is before you right now is gone. When the chance to commit is gone. When the chance to serve and to sacrifice and to love will be no more. I don't know what we're waiting for. I said this was true of me. I don't know what I was waiting for. Commit today. Sacrifice today. Be all in today. And I think it would be easy. It'd be easy to think, well, I am. It'd be easy for me. I'm a missionary. I moved to the other side of the world. Well, I am. Do you know that I can be a missionary living on the other side of the world and I can throw days away? I try not to. So don't think, well, it's good other people are hearing this, but I'm already all in. Really? You were yesterday, maybe. Tomorrow are you going to be? Commit today. I've been doing street level, I don't know, I don't want to say how long it is, you'll figure out how old I am, but I've been doing street level for a long time now, and what seems to be is that people always have excuse. Well, this week I've got these classes, but next week I'll be there. Well, I'll really get serious about serving God after this semester. I got these exams, or well, it's the holidays, you know, I got these 3 weeks, that I'll just take these 3 weeks off. And the problem is there's always excuse after excuse. Well, I got to finish school. I need to graduate. I need to get a job. I need to get married. I need to have kids. And then procrastination after procrastination. And then your life's gone. Gone. Okay? Before you know it, you look and you're like, oh, my eyes don't work. My knees hurt. not as strong as I used to be. I don't have the same opportunities as I used to have. My life's passed me by. I'm less flexible. I'm less able to do what I once was able to do. I threw it away. All of us have wasted time. There's no one in here who hasn't wasted time. Let's not waste any more. You know, in like middle school, you learn that there's renewable resources and non-renewable resources. I'm going to assume that you took that class. Time is one of the non-renewable ones. There's not going to get any more. But you know that most of the non-renewable resources, they keep finding more. It's like, oh, we're going to run out of oil. Well, look under here. There's a whole bunch of oil. We're going to run out of coal. Oh, we found a bunch of coal. No one is ever going to be out for a hike one day and lift up a rock and be like, oh, look, there's some time. This is the one non-renewable. You won't find more. Remember him now when your wits are about you. Remember him now when you're making decisions before you've gone and headed off on the wrong road. Remember your Creator now before you forget the God who made you. Remember him now while you have the rest of your lifetime, however long it might be, to live for his glory. So, Bible writer, many of you may have heard of him, Charles Bridges. He said, many have remembered God too late. Many of them have remembered God too late, but he goes on and he says, no one has remembered him too early. Okay, there's no one who at some point comes to remember God, commit to God, sacrifice for God, and think, I just wish I had a couple more years to myself. No one does that. Charles Spurgeon says, do not leave for tomorrow what can be done today, because, and here's where this matters. At first you might be thinking, oh, I should put that like about my cleaning and I should take care of all this stuff. No, that's not his point. He says, for time is short and eternity is long. Okay, he's not talking about laundry. One other quote, and I like this one. It says, tomorrow is the devil's day, but today is God's. Satan does not care how spiritual your intentions are or how holy your resolutions might be if only they are determined to be done tomorrow. Okay, Satan loves empty promises of, I'm going to do this for God. Someday I'll get around to doing this. You know, I'm going to go on this missions trip. I'm going to be all in. I'm going to join this. As long as you never get around to stepping up and actually doing it. And the reality is, you look around, there's too much to be done. Okay, there's too much to be done. This church has too much to do for you to wait. Verse 8. It says, vanity of vanities, says the preacher. All is vanity. So just kind of a reminder. Why the wake-up call? Why tell us to remember God? Well, because everything else is useless. Everything else is empty. Everything else is trash. Everything else is a waste of time. Nothing else matters. Life without God is futile. So why the wake-up call? Because nothing else is worth it. Do you know even the good stuff? Like, some of you might have stuff that you like. You're like, I kind of like my house. I kind of like my car. It's not going to be there in heaven waiting for you. So you can spend weekend after weekend working on your house. It's not going to be there. You can wash your car as much as you want to get the road salt off and keep the rust away. And I promise you, you're not driving it in heaven. And I promise you that in heaven, you're not going to wish that you were. That's why Jesus tells us, don't store up these treasures here on heaven. Don't worry about it here on heaven. Instead, store them up, or here on earth, store them up in heaven where moth and rust won't destroy. So don't worry about it. On the way here, I stopped at my 87-year-old grandma's house. And some of you have met her. She's actually been here, a great Christian example, and I'm very thankful for her. And one of the last things she said to me is, I just don't care about any of this stuff anymore. All I'm concerned with is people's souls and that they're ready to meet Jesus. 87 years old, and she's looking at her stuff. She's like, this stuff doesn't matter to me anymore. And she's living it out. She's remembering God today. She doesn't have a lot of years left. And yet she's going to use him. Okay, this is one of those things that you know, if we were more charismatic, people would be like, hey man, we shouldn't waste our life. And yet, tomorrow we'll waste it. We'll waste it. We won't use it for anything. Might as well have not even happened. What a lot of people do, I would say most people at church today, they will agree with everything I said. They'll agree with Solomon's words, they'll agree with God, and then won't live it out. Well, we get to decide. We get to decide, will we embrace the urgency, the radical nature of the call, the incomparable importance of a life spent with God, or will we just kind of keep going on our own way? And the reality is, this is a challenge. Like, if this just sounds easy, well, yeah, I'll do it. You probably don't get it. This is a challenge. This should seem difficult. This should seem like a high, radical call. Some of us think it's unreasonable, even. And that's why he tells us in verses 9 and 10, it says, moreover, because the preacher was wise, he still taught the people knowledge. Yes, he pondered and sought out, and he set in order many proverbs. The preacher sought to find acceptable words, and what was written was upright words of truth. So at this point, we should realize, hey, this is going to be hard, and there's a reminder, yeah, but this is true. You might not like it, this might sound extreme, but it's right and it's true. He goes on, verse 11, the words of the wise are like goads, and the words of the scholars are like well-driven nails given by one shepherd. And further, my son, be admonished by these. Of making many books there is no end, and of much study is wearisome to the flesh. Okay, he says, words like this, words that are true, scripture, are like goads. And we might not know what goads are, because you probably aren't, you know, using them daily. But if you've read scripture, you know, goads are the sharp, pointy stick that would be used to get animals to go the direction they were supposed to go. And he says, truth, accurate biblical truth, is like that. And I still listen to the sermons, okay? I try my best to actually not miss any. And guess what? Sometimes I hear what Pastor Tim says, and it feels like he's poking me with a stick, and I want him to leave me alone. It's supposed to be like that. In fact, if it never does, the stick's still poking, but you've kind of built this wall. You've become numb to it. And remember what the stick is supposed to do? It's supposed to redirect you. It's supposed to wake you up from going the direction that you are going to the direction you're supposed to go. Okay, and when that stops happening, it's on you. This should hit us. It should feel something. There should be a jabbing, striking impact. That's what a goad is. Jabbing, striking impact. And you know what happens if you kind of ignore it? If you ignore it for too long, you don't feel it anymore. You don't feel it anymore. You ever need to get someone's attention, so you tap them on the shoulder? And they just, it's like they don't want to pay any attention. So then you kind of tap a little bit harder. Well, eventually, you're just going to have to poke a lot harder. And we don't like that. It's like, just stop it already, God. I've had enough. Okay, do you really want to say that? You want him to leave you alone. You want to just go off your own way. Do you remember where going off your own way leads? Nowhere. You'll just keep going, and you're going to hit that brick wall, and you're going to bounce off of it. Then it says also that it should be like well-driven nails. Well-driven nails. If I went to your house right now, and I lifted one of maybe whatever picture you have that's hanging on the wall that's the biggest, or if you have a TV mounted on the wall, if I pulled that down, would I find like 7 holes because you were trying to find where the stud is? Or would it be well-driven, like you actually knew what you were doing? Like it actually drove in and it stuck. It pierced in, but didn't just fall back out unsupported, but it stuck. God's word, truth, is meant to pierce, and it's going to hurt, and then it stays. It's well-driven. It doesn't just fall out. That's what this is supposed to be like. It's meant to hold firm, deeply secure. It'll feel that sting, it redirects, and it stays there. And notice where these words come from. Where do these words come from? It says one shepherd, by one shepherd. And your Bible probably has shepherd capitalized. Capitalized. These are God's words. God's words. This is a clear pointing to God. In John chapter 10, verse 27, Jesus says, "My sheep," because he's the shepherd, "they hear my voice. I know them. They follow me." Okay, so when we hear these words, it's not just someone's good idea. It's not just Solomon's good idea. It's not just me. It's not just Tim when he talks to you. No, this is what God said. And yeah, it's going to hurt. It's supposed to. It's supposed to. He observes in verse 12 that there's lots of books. He's like, there's lots of books, and you know, you could be constantly researching, but he says it's always wearisome. Always wearisome. This reminds me of the people that are discussed in 2 Timothy, where they're always learning. They're always studying, but they never can actually get to an answer. They never actually get to an answer. These are the people that they come to church week after week and they hear messages like this. They hear all kinds of truth. And they're interested. They're always learning. They're always learning. But for them, if they ever actually came to an answer, they ever came to the turning point, the decision time, that'd be too hard. One author wrote this. We grow addicted to research and learning, in love with our hard questions, but if we actually got an answer, it would spoil everything. Because then it would actually cost you something. It would actually cost you something. Okay, verse 13 says, "Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter." He's like, this is it. Let us hear the conclusion. Why does this matter? Who cares? What's the big deal? Here it is. "Fear God, keep his commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil." This is so simple that it's almost like it's got to be harder than this. No, it's really not. I don't need to explain how, well, this doesn't actually mean what it says. No, it means what it says. Fear God, do what he says. There we have it. That is your all. Your translation might have a heading up above that where it says the whole duty of man. This is your whole duty. This is what life's about. This is what life's about. So what is your life about? And we know what it should be. We know what it should be. But what's it actually? What's it actually about? Comfort, success, finances, popularity? Or is it about fearing God, obeying the Lord? This is everything. And some of us, we don't like this idea to fear God. That's like, well, we're not supposed to fear God. God's this great grandfather. He's really compassionate. He's kind. He wouldn't ever say anything that would make me need to fear him. But no, the Bible says we're supposed to fear him over and over. You could list the verses. And at first you'd say, well, those are Old Testament verses. Really? Maybe you should read Matthew 10, Romans 3, Revelations 14, Philippians 2, and like the 15 other ones that I just didn't feel like writing down. Okay, this isn't Old Testament. We're supposed to fear God. Because Hebrews 10:31 says it's a fearful thing. It's a fearful thing to fall into the hands of a living God. It's a fearful thing. Do you know that God's perfect? He's holy. He's just. No sin at all. He has all power. Do you know that if he wanted to, he could just crush you? And that the Bible says, if he did it, you would deserve it. You would deserve it. Now, when we understand this, the crazy thing is when we understand this, this fear of God, and we don't run from him, but we run to him. We run to him. So do you have a fear of God? Does your understanding of God allow for fear of him? And he ends with this kind of warning, this warning, just so that we can't forget, God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. Okay, this isn't new information. God's going to judge us. 1 Corinthians 4:5, he will bring the light of things now hidden. So the things that you're hiding that I don't know about, they're hidden in darkness. He will disclose the purposes of the heart. In Matthew, it says that we will give an account for the words that we speak. The words that we speak. Okay, one day God's going to expose every secret sin, uncover all of the things that we don't want anyone to know about. One day he's going to uncover all the good things too, good and bad. He will bring every last thing of our life to judgment, whether good or evil. Which, what's interesting is, at that point, okay, God's going to look at how we lived. It brings us to almost the exact opposite of how Ecclesiastes started, okay? Ecclesiastes started, vanity of vanity, everything's meaningless, nothing matters. And here he's like, well, actually, in another way, everything matters. Everything matters. Every day, every minute, every decision you make, it matters. Everything has importance. The final message of Ecclesiastes isn't that nothing matters, but that everything does, because we will answer to God. There's no escape from this. No escape. We will stand before him. And what are we going to say? What are we going to say? I think of this a lot. Doing street level, there's a problem that I'll put it on the younger people, but plenty of us are guilty, where we can't put our phones down. And I just wonder the people who are going to have to stand before God and say, I know you had stuff for me to do. I know I was supposed to live for you, but I mean, I had some scrolling to do. There were these videos. You ever hear of YouTube, God? That's what people are going to have to say if they're honest. If they're honest before God, they're going to say, yeah, but look at this. And you're going to hold up a phone that doesn't work anymore because it didn't make it to heaven. You're going to reach in your pocket and it's like, crap, it's not there. Okay, this is exactly what Jesus tells us. If you cling to your life, you're going to lose it. Okay, if you chase after your desires, your plans, you're going to lose it. But he says that if you let go of it, if you actually give it to me, if you'll remember me, if you'll live for me, then you'll find real life. Then you'll find real life. As the music teams up, I want to read to you Romans chapter 13, verse 11 and 12. So if the music team would come up, we'll sing one more song. Romans chapter 13, verse 11 and 12. And this is from the Amplified Bible. It says, Do this, knowing that this is a critical time. It is already the hour for you to awaken from your sleep of spiritual complacency. For our salvation is nearer to us now than we first believed in Christ. The night, this present evil age, is almost gone, and the day of Christ's return is almost here. Guys, the message here today is now is the time. Now is the time, remember God. And remember him with more than your mind, with more than just empty words, because he created you. He knows what he's doing. Fear him. Keep his commandments. It's what life is all about. If you want to stand.